guess this is really, to some degree, still informal in many ways. So I don't think it's a matter of you know, chairing it or anything like that, but just having a discussion. So so I think this will be even less formal than our last meeting. But three working groups were established by the conference committee, and one was to talk about accountability in terms of academic accountability related to our state assessments and to our state academic assessment system. And Senator Wigger, at the last meeting, you actually put together, I think it was you, put together a very helpful cheat sheet of a list of the sections that would be involved in this discussion. And so I thought we would do, just to start off, and actually Senator Rummel, based on our informal discussion on Saturday, I think put together a real nice agenda for us today.
Okay.
So we just sort of go through that agenda, and as I understand the agenda, really it's about getting to an understanding of what the policy implications are behind these proposals. To see if there's any common ground between Senate and House interest, and to see if and to sort of test out some of the weaknesses, if there are any weaknesses in any of the proposals here. So does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Yeah. Representative Peterson? Okay. Well, we're good. Well, then, I'll just start, and then we'll just dive in. And I'm just going to work off of your cheat sheet, Senator Wigger. You had identified 10 sections. And do we have copies of that?
Is there a copy of that sheet?
I left one upstairs.
Okay.
There you go.
So, Senator Rummel, on your agenda, we thought, one, we talk about the big parameter of these, two, distinctions between the House and the Senate, three, link, interconnected, or, oh, to try to link the sections with one another. We do have certain sections on the House side that we think are meant to work together with one another. And then later on to talk about what the issues, common understanding, and, like I said, any weaknesses. What I have, and this is working off of your sheet, Senator Wigger, is section on page R6, section 5, is the first piece, and that has to do with the Office of Educational Accountability. This is House language that attempts to align high school tests with college readiness expectations. So that's the one where we charge MNSCU and the Commissioner of Education MNSCU and OEA, Office of Educational Accountability, to align, to do some alignment of those tests with college readiness. And that appears in two sections, because one is a direction to the OEA, and the other is a direction to MNSCU. And then we have another small provision on page R9, section 7, which is actually a Representative Abler provision. This has to do with reports being required for locally developed standards. And if I recall correctly, those are the arts and language.
Oh,
no, health. Health and FIAD right now.
World languages.
Yeah. All right, Career and Technical, World Languages, Health, and actually FIAD now, though we propose to change the FIADs later. Then there's a governor's provision in Section 10 on R14, and that's the statewide testing. The House pretty much just took the Senate's, or rather the governor's language on this, except we did do a small modification to extend 1 year previous language that directed the commissioner to include a value-added component in addition to the other measurement outcomes. And I know, Senator Rummel, when we spoke on Saturday, you had some concerns and questions about just the whole concept of value-added components. And then on R18, Section 11, we have this is the House section that funds the Office of Educational Accountability and then directs it very broadly to report back to the legislature on the commissioner's efficacy, if you will, in terms of assessment systems, and I believe in terms of language related to the school report cards. The next section is R19, Section 12 in the House, and that modifies the current language on school performance report cards. That's a current directive to the Commissioner of Education. And I think to simplify, the description of it really basically narrows that down to being clear about AYP designation, or reporting, rather, on AYP, and then holds off, and you correct me if I say anything wrong, Ms. Larson, but holds off on some of the five or six other indicators until later on when we create this task force where the Office of Educational Accountability is going to develop hopefully some dynamic additional factors to AYP in terms of telling the story of our school's performances.
Perspective of success rather than failure.
Oh, yes, and I'm reminded that the philosophy behind this from the House, and I think the Senate shares this philosophy, is that we're terribly concerned that the NCLB framework really focuses heavily on failure, that there's sort of a, you know, there's a punitive nature to it, and there's sort of a focus, an emphasis on failure, and we're obviously, you know, bound by, you know, to the degree that we continue to take Title I money, bound by NCLB guidelines here, but we're also interested in going beyond that. And so our big emphasis here really is to focus on success measurements in our schools. What's going well? Why is it going well? And how do we communicate that to the public? And so to add some dimensionality to our reporting accountability system in regards to Minnesota public. Let's see. And then Section 26 in the Senate, that's your NCLB position. And perhaps you might want to just talk quickly about what that does, and we can circle back to it.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. This was an amendment added on the floor, and it is an update of a statute that's currently in law. It strikes out the outdated elements and adds a couple of elements. One in particular is using multiple measures, using the growth model as two components of what we want to look we wanted, it looks like in determining that it's lines 4318 that we participate in a growth model program. I think that was one of the key elements. And then certain minor elements regarding sanctions and how AYP is determined and how the supplementary services are provided. So it's simply an update of the statute that we currently have to reflect interests that are, or directions that people are hoping to move in.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk, with the NCLB, can you talk a little bit about the growth model that you would anticipate? I mean, how that would work with the NCLB? Mm-hmm.
We heard a number of times in committee from school districts and from stakeholder groups that many, many school districts use the Northwest Area Education Assessment, NWEA, or other types of assessments like that, where the growth of the student can be measured at the beginning of the year, the middle of the year, the end of the year, and it shows how the student progresses during the year. And the hope was that some kind of model like that could be part of our statewide accountability system.
And is that a cohort model or an individual student model?
That's individual student, and I think some of the concerns that the commissioner talked about is if we were to use an off-the-shelf test, do they align with our standards? That was one concern that was raised. But then the question that people were asking, or we are asking, is can we have a growth model that does align?
I think one thing I need to clarify in my mind, the difference, which I'm interested, the difference between the growth model and the value added. Is there a difference? And if so, what is it?
You know, you have the value added, and I believe, let me see if I can track down which.
I think we're going to be discussing both of those, and I think that if there is some finite difference, I need to know.
On page 18, section 11, if you look really closely, page 18 and section 11. Lines 4825 and 4826, a value-added assessment model that estimates the effect of the school and school district on student achievement to measure school performance. So the changes in student achievement that are recorded, I'm assuming, in the MCAs, and we have an expert from the commissioner here from the department, are then used to identify which schools are and what techniques and which teachers actually are affecting student achievement. So it's a slightly different type of testing.
You know, it might be helpful at some point to hear some from the department to talk about value added versus growth versus you know, other approaches. And I know that I think that when I look at the language in statute, current statute, it looks like at one time we were, as a legislature, really blurring our understanding between value added and growth models, and I think we're slowly starting to appreciate that there is a difference here. And I think, you know, just from the House side, in terms of the language that we have, our intention, I think, Representative Peterson, isn't so much to, you know, make a discriminatory direction to the commissioner about what models to use in terms of Minnesota's approach, as much as it is fully pursue what those different models are and come back with recommendations to us about how those could fit into an effective statewide accountability system, even
exactly.
Independent of NCLB
exactly.
Expectations.
I mean, currently AYP is determined based on the cohort
right.
Model. And I think there are some plans to change that somewhat, but not by individual student. Many of the schools employ the growth model, the NWEA model, so that they give direction immediately, feedback instantly to teachers so that they can target their instruction. And so the idea is, can we have an accountability system that shows student growth rather than one that simply shows scores going up? So it certainly seems like something that we all need further clarification on, and how and whether that's possible, both under NCLB, but also as a way to direct our own
right.
Policy.
Okay. Just to finish then, on the provisions that Senator Wigger had identified for us last Friday or Saturday, these Section 47, R55, is language that attempts to that mirrors the previous language that attempts to align K-12 certain 10th and 11th grade tests with post-secondary readiness, and so it's a directive the same directive to MNSCU as we direct to the OEA. Section 43 is Representative Peterson's provision on supplemental I'm sorry, 53? Did I say something else? Section 53 is Representative Peterson's Supplemental Educational Services Providers directed to the commissioner to establish some standards on how to measure their effectiveness. Therefore, if they're not effective, to establish a procedure for removing them from the list of eligible providers.
The Senate raises the issue of supplemental service providers in their NCLB provision.
Okay. So it sounds like the Senate has some similar interest in this as in your NCLB provision. You're also concerned with the effectiveness of supplemental educational service providers.
Right. In our Nickleby provision, what we're looking at putting the supplemental services provided first, and that schools can participate in providing those supplementary services before we indicate or encourage students to move out into a choice system.
Okay.
But it certainly makes sense, as I listen to you, to be talking about how are those supplementary services performing, and whether or not it's possible to withhold approval. I mean, that makes a good deal of sense to.
And apparently, I'm told, or our counsel tells us, that there is a provision in federal law that requires our state commissioners to do that, but we haven't been doing it, and so we're trying to address both a need, but also a expectation of NCLB here. I think I shared in my committee that a few months ago, late fall, I was at a conference on a panel with one of the supplemental providers, and this is a terrific gentleman. He runs an African American focused group working with primarily African American young men and women. And he shared with me that he was actually surprised when, you know, when he was able to have his program designated as a supplemental educational service provider. After the first year, he contacted the commissioner's office and said, "Well, you know, where do I send my report to? And you know, when do you want it? And how bad?" And they told him, "You don't need to send us a report." And so here's a person who, you know, was contracted to do the work. And, you know, you would think, you know, he'd think, "Oh, great, you know, less work for me." But he, you know, is a good professional who cares about these kids and cares about the quality of his work, integrity of his work. He was actually shocked that he was not expected to send a report into the Department of Education. So there are lots of good conscientious people out there who I think that's a good quality expectation of our department. Then the final piece, actually there's two other pieces, is on R61, Section 59, and that's the one where we direct the Office of Educational Accountability to set up an advisory task force group to, among other things, do a redesign of the state report card expectations. And we're pretty prescriptive in terms of who's going to be on this advisory group, and I know, Senator Rummel, you've had some concerns about perhaps the people, types of people that we've left off of that advisory group. And so I think we can talk through the pros and cons of that. And then in on page R69, then we have the appropriations. And on the House side, we clearly do appropriations for the Office of Educational Accountability. I haven't checked the number yet. There are appropriations related to testing provisions, and I think there was another section of appropriations related to this whole area. But we could look through those later on. I would suggest. I mean, really, I think our focus is the policy stuff, and then we can have a discussion later with fiscal staff about level of appropriations and types of appropriations. I thought I would also really quickly put together some of these pieces for you, and I will do this on a separate sheet, so we're all working off the same piece. But on the House side, there's several pieces that are interconnected. So those OEA pieces, language on Section 11, in the House, Section 12 in the House, and Section 59 in the House are all related to the Office of Educational Accountability.
And Section 5.
And Section 5? Why do I not have Section 5 in front of me? Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Section 5. And then there are a couple of other pieces that are also connected. Part of Section 5, part of Section 47, or actually all of Section 47, have to do with that alignment of the K-12 10th and 11th grade tests with college readiness. And then I think the rest are pretty much standalone provisions. That would include, Representative Peterson, your supplemental services piece.
And there's across in the Office of Education Accountability, we have you put the link between Section 47 is the two sides, but we also have report card and advisory groups that are. So in the if you want to subdivide Office of OEA, we have two. It looks like two sets of concerns. Mm-hmm. One is the college readiness.
Mm-hmm.
Two sides of that.
That's right.
Equation. And in the other hand, we have the OEA doing performance data, which kind of crosses all of them. But then most more specifically, setting up the advisory group on the report card. There was something else on the report card that was Section 11. Is that does not have the Office of Education Accountability?
Section 11.
Yeah, Section 11 funds the Office of Educational Accountability. And then gives it that broad job description in terms of overseeing the commissioner's reports back to us on performance data consistent with current statute.
Now, we had some discussion about these things, but I'd be curious on the House side, what was the discussion? Let's just talk about the college readiness. What was the thinking? What was the discussion on that topic?
Yeah, you know, that actually came in later in our process, and it actually came in more through an initiative in higher ed, and Chairperson Rukavina and Chairperson Greiley worked out the language. And initially, if I remember right, Chair Rukavina had this concept that there would be a high-stakes test, and I think an additional test, if that's correct. And they were going to build that into their omnibus bill. And, of course, you know, it impacts K-12, so Representative Reiling. And he had a good discussion, and they backed off of the high-stakes additional test and simply left it at, working to align the 10th and 11th grade tests with college readiness. And other than that, in terms of where it came from, Senator, I know that there's been a lot of discussion in the Minnesota P16 in this regard, and I suspect in the governor's high school reform redesign task force. But there's a lot of, and again, I'm just sort of editorializing here because I don't know exactly who brought it. I suspect Minsky brought the provision in to higher ed. But I know that there's a lot of discussion all over the country about, this issue of aligning K-12 outcomes with college readiness. We've heard a lot from the systems over the last few years about the large percentage of students who are taking remedial courses once they hit our colleges and universities.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's cost factors related to that, but I suspect there's also, you know, a lot of frustration and sort of the entire K-16 system about graduating students that in large percentages are still doing remedial work in post-secondary. So I think this is I don't think this is the total answer to this, but I think it's a step in the right direction in terms of looking at these two systems, post-secondary and K-12, as less separate systems and systems that really ought to make sense to one another, and that when a student goes through it, there should be a full expectation of the K to go through the K-12 system means you should be ready to to be academically
to be able to walk right into a classroom, college,
secondary,
and that Minsky would be the collaborating partner in determining that, as opposed to you. Was there some discussion about that?
You know, I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know.
Something that would be worth exploring.
Yeah, and I know that the DU is not a part of that, not in the language here.
I think one of the other pieces that must be in the other committees is that whole idea of the college and the schools, too, and the different ways that you can begin to get your college as you're in the high school. And so, but that's not in our pieces, as I could see, so that must be in one of the other committees. But that certainly is another piece of this whole blending of the 11 through 14 concept. And so somehow we need to start thinking about that in a different way. This language doesn't particularly do that, but I know that is part of, has been part of the discussion, big part of the discussion in the Ed Policies Committee.
When I look at the governor's section 10, I'm just trying to, again, we have a little overlap here, and I'm just trying to figure out how we reconcile them or whether they need to be reconciled. In the governor's section in lines, well, it's really the majority of it, but check lines 44.32 and onwards. It looks like a student can receive a diploma either for passing the MCAs or for passing the grad test, which is embedded in the MCAs. And I'm not too sure what the difference is between the, and I'll just use the word rigor, between the MCAs. What the MCAs are doing that's different from what the grad test will be doing. Is the grad test, for example, a replacement of the basic standards? And so is the basic standards sufficiently rigorous for students to walk into a college classroom? So we've got two alternatives for receiving the diploma in one piece of the legislation here, and then we have this other requirement in your section 5. And I think these are very important things that we need to work out.
Yeah, and Senator, we may want to ask the department to comment on what their, you know, what the standard is in terms of that question of rigor related to the grad test. But yeah, and then there's the broader question of how do we then align? Is there an alignment between that provision and the Section 5 and Section 5 and Section 47 provisions. So, hello, Department.
Commissioner Anderson and Mr. Mattson, can you help enlighten us?
Good morning, members. I'll be glad to. Dirk Mattson for the Department. The difference between the MCA-2 and the grad test that's being proposed, as you know, the MCA-2 is given once per year, and there is no retest other than obviously if I was absent during that day and during the same week. So there's no regularly scheduled retest. The graduation required assessment for diploma, is a subset of the MCA-2 that's designed to be given on a much more regular retest basis. It can so in a number of items, the grad test contains 65 operational items. The score for the MCA-2, I hope I didn't misspeak, the MCA-2 has 65 items by which a student's score is based. The grad has 40 items by which the score is based.
Are they equally rigorous?
The items that are on the grad test there's a component, about two-thirds of the test are the same items or the same items from that MCA-2. There are 15 questions on the grad test that are determined to be essential learnings, we call them, and those were designed by Minnesota teachers looking at the standards, saying these are minimum for a high school diploma. So two-thirds of the test comes from the MCA-2. A third of it then is identified as these essential learnings, and the passing score on the grad test has yet to be determined. That would be determined through a process called standard setting, where stakeholders come together and essentially answer the simple question of, it's a much more involved process, but how much is good enough? How much is required on this test? Is it 40 out of 40 correct? Is it what have you? And they'll go through that process through a standard process that's used in measurement to determine how much is good enough on that test.
Are we using the GRAD test now?
No, ma'am. The GRAD test currently would be for those students who are in ninth grade currently and moving forward. So those students who are on the BST system, if you will remain on that. And this test is getting ready for implementation next year for 10th graders.
A student who passes the GRAD test, would that student be college ready?
Senator, I'm just trying to resolve the two parts. We're struggling with two articles here that seem to be somewhat.
Senator, I believe, I don't know if that has exactly a yes or a no answer. I would say that the GRAD test is not designed to say this matches college algebra level standards, for example, in the mathematics. That's not the design. Again, it's intended to say this is at least the minimum to say for a high school diploma. So at least in the policy setting, to take the place of the BST, although definitely more rigorous than the basic skills test.
And it sounds like the same answer would apply to the MCA too. So not just, the center asked the question about the GRAD test, but you know, in terms of sort of this next stage of thinking about our entire testing system in terms of aligning with college readiness, that's not necessarily the design intention of the MCA twos.
Members of the committee, Chaz Anderson, Deputy Commissioner, I just want to kind of switch that focus to the language on the college readiness and the MCA2s, and you're correct, Representative Mariani, the MCA2s are not designed to be a college readiness test. It's very hard to design one test to do many things. I will say that our P16 council has a working group on the 11th grade math test and has been working with the University of Minnesota to determine if proficiency on the 11th grade math test and the MCA2s would mean that you are college ready in a two-year institution, and frankly, they do not have enough data to even make that determination. And so the idea was that they would come back after a couple years' worth of data and look at this issue again, because they felt that with 1 year's worth of data on an 11th grade math test, they couldn't make that determination of what's a college readiness cut score if proficiency is college ready. I will also mention that, you know, we give the ninth grade writing test, the 10th grade language arts test, and then the 11th grade math test. I think it's very hard to determine on a 9th or 10th grade test, especially for writing in language arts, is this student college ready if they're proficient? They're only in 9th grade. They're only in 10th grade. They still have a number of years in the high school system to become college ready. So this is an issue that we have explored in the P16 Council. Our higher education institutions are involved with that. We will continue discussions on the 11th grade math test. We are willing to look at the 10th grade test and the 9th grade test, but at this time we're very uncomfortable with the provision to require that we set college readiness cut scores on the MCA2 tests.
Thank you, Commissioner. So just to help me clarify again, the MCAs basically are designed to test the system and not test the student. Is that correct?
Senator Rummel, that is correct.
So if we are represented... Tip Mariani. So mm-hmm. If we are trying to also figure out if students are college ready, we may need some other. I don't know. I think we need probably to look at this particular article more closely, and it certainly makes sense to have the OEA helping us out on that.
I will say, Representative Mariani and Senator Rummel and committee members, Minsku does have a placement test called the AccuPlacer. They give that to their incoming freshmen. I'm really not as familiar with that assessment and exactly its rigor or what exactly the measurements come out to be. But I think that if you'd like to have a discussion with Minsku, at least on that issue, they do give the AccuPlacer, which is their placement test.
So in your opinion, it would make sense to use Minsku as somebody to help us do this?
Senator Rummel, yes, I think they need to be in this conversation.
Representative, did you want to say something?
Madam Chairman, I'll briefly, just from the school board's perspective, we're very concerned about this college readiness language because we're afraid, as we read the language as it's in the bill, that it looks like when that test is taken, they have to be immediately college ready. And I think the deputy commissioner mentioned that. But that's a concern because in 10th grade you have 2 more years of learning. So it's more like we need language to say, is your child or student on track to meet that goal? The other piece that I found serving on the P16 committee is that the college standards across the state of Minnesota are not the same. Virtually every institution has different admission standards, and I think that's the other place where this disconnect comes apart, at least for districts trying to really make sure all their students are college ready for every institution in Minnesota. So if you would keep that in mind, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you all. I think we're going to move our discussion on a little.
And I want to ask one other question. Oops. Are those same kinds of standards applied to the post-secondary options? I mean, are you looking at that issue also as you look at the tests and talk about whether students are ready for post-secondary?
Representative Peterson, students that enter into PSEO still need to take the MCA2s. They're not exempt from that, the accountability system.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be assurance of alignment to state standards. And so I think that the accountability is there for those students as well. And if they're not proficient on the MCA2s and they're a post-secondary education option student, then the school and the higher ed institution need to assess if those options are appropriate for the student.
Okay. Thank you.
So we heard some helpful advice.
We got some helpful information.
In terms of, you know, a little deeper understanding, I think there's some excellent points that have been made in terms of, you know, some concern about this college readiness expectation. I think it's a good expectation, and I know the P16 does too, and I know that they are working, toward that. And I had heard in the P16, my jaw actually dropped when I heard that a few months ago in the P16 about how every campus actually has, they set for themselves, what's college ready. And, you might be college ready on one campus in a particular course, but you may not be ready in another. So I think that there's a lot of work and a lot of concern happening within the Minsky system itself in terms of whether or not they want that level of uniformity applied. But I suspect, Senators, this goes back to a system that, where you had a lot of autonomy. You had, Minsky wasn't even around as a system, 12 years ago. But I think this language of, perhaps if we were to keep this language on track, is probably helpful advice. I think it's a point well taken that a 10th grader, may not, that being on track to college readiness, when you're 15 years old, is probably much more realistic than saying, at the point that you take the test, you've demonstrated college readiness at that point.
And Representative Mariani, I agree with you. I also agree with you on the idea that we need to possibly get a more rounded and comprehensive picture of the various accountability tools that we have at our disposal. If we have, on the one hand, as a state, a goal to move more and more of our students into college and into college successfully without repeating, and then also completing college, and on the other hand, a measurement system that how do we know that they're on track for that? And so we probably do need to take a step back at what can help us do what. The other item that you have a couple of articles on regards the report card. Did you want to give us some of your thinking on the report card? What was the discussion?
Yeah. Well, generally, quite honestly, there's just been a lot of angst about the report card. We hear, from people who testified from different districts. I think all of us, at least a lot of us have heard a lot of confusion from constituents about what the report card means. Some of us have gone on and on the website, to look up, what the report card says about certain schools. Have been a little bit surprised And so I think part of this is sort of, you know, similar to the Senate's wanting to, you know, take a deep breath. You know, I think, you know, there's a bit of taking a deep breath here on this report card issue. There's confusion about the mix between AYP, reporting on the report card and the other elements that we had sought in current statute to be reported on. You know, it's pretty clear to me that AYP really dominates, you know, that designation. We also thought that the report card nonetheless can be a very useful tool if it isn't solely dominated by NCLB expectations. If we can come up with a reporting mechanism that highlights success as much as it highlights failure, so that could, you know, better arm, you know, the public with discerning information about the different schools. I think for some members there has been some frustration that we're simply haven't been moving, you know, aggressively enough and fast enough in terms of going beyond NCLB, factors as designated in our reporting mechanisms to the public. And so the concept then was to have a independent group of people, the Office of Educational Accountability, which we used to fund at one time, to guide a Minnesota community discussion about how we can add some dimensionality to those report cards beyond AYP dominance of them. So that's basically it. I mean, it's not a terribly complicated, you know, proposal, I think, on our part. At this point, just really trying to make it real clear that for now the report card will use the AYP designation as its primary, what it primarily tells the public, while we take some time out to look at, you know, what are those other factors that we want to be able to communicate with the public. Representative Breinert has worked awfully hard on this issue. Representative Slocum, I can tell you a lot of our first-termers, many who aren't even on our education committees, either campaigned on this issue or heard about this issue, and we're constantly knocking on the education committee door about, can we do something about the report cards? A lot of folks really feel that there's a punitive and not clear enough picture for the public about what we're telling them about our schools.
We had very similar conversations in our policy committee, and I think there are a tremendous number of really valuable pieces of information in the report card, and it's not to be discounted by any means.
I agree.
The unfortunate thing is we live in a headline society, and the headline, the snapshot of attaching stars to one factor of the report card skews the public perception of the success of the school or the success of the children. And so we need to figure out a way that we give a full, and I like the way you have your language here, a full and fair picture of what's going on. So this is a very interesting notion. When we talk about the advisory group, I believe it's Section 59 that we're looking at, where we get somewhat specific about the advisory group. I noticed that you have three evaluation directors, one superintendent, a person from the University of Minnesota faculty. It's page 61. A teacher and two parents. Lines 86.21 and down. So I have just some questions about, I owned a small business, and as most of us who go out after RFPs to get our customers, depending on the skills of your business, the people that you bring to the task often predetermines the kind of an outcome. And so I would like to have some discussion about who the members of that group are. It seems to me that if we're going to have a report card that does report the success, we need to involve, for example, and I'm just going to go off the top of my head, possibly a curriculum director rather than three measurement people. What are we measuring? We're measuring a curriculum. And I do like the fact that you've got parents in here, because parents are the ones that have to interpret that data. So how is the data meaningful to parents? So those are just two suggestions that I'd like to see us explore a little bit if we move down this path of the Office of Education Accountability.
Yeah, and I think we're really open to that as well. I mean, I would want to make sure that whoever, even within the current definitions or prescriptions, are people who have an understanding of cultural competency because of the increasingly diverse nature of our K-12 classrooms. I think we're real open to that kind of, you know, broader participation.
Did you want to say anything further about asking the commissioner to do something about evaluating the supplementary providers?
Do you want to talk about that?
No, other than I think we need to be assured that when we're providing supplemental services, we have some way of evaluating how effective they are, how effective they have been. Initially, there certainly are some criteria, or should be some criteria, about the expectations. And I know that's not an easy task to disaggregate that kind of data about how effective a supplemental provider has been versus all the other things that are going on either in the classroom or within the school or all the other factors. But we need to develop some way of assuring that when we contract with a supplemental provider, they are providing those services and they are getting value added to the students, because those are students in need, and we haven't seen that. And so that's what we're looking for. It's pretty clear cut. I mean, you know, those contract providers are there. I like the idea, too, that they're provided. And I thought they were, you know, before they have that school choice, that they would be provided that service. I thought that they would be provided that even before the school choice. But that is interesting. And it should be before, you know, they opt to have that available service.
I'm reminded that the legislative auditor report on this, was that 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Boy, it's been a while. At least a year, maybe probably two. Yeah, it was a previous. apparently, this was also one of his recommendations. That he saw that as a flaw and a hole in our accountability system. And then I'm also told that Dr. Heistad from Minneapolis, and he testified in committee. Has done some measurements and has set up some evaluative thinking about how to measure these providers, and can offer us some further justification for wanting to go down this road. I know we need to wrap up because the other group is.
And I've been advised that there is a pilot program at the federal level to do just what you described.
A pilot program?
To do just what you described, yes. So we might have actually some guidelines coming down the pipe. How do we wrap this up? We have other people waiting their turn.
Well, I think, perhaps, Senator Rummel, you might want to think about some language in regards to the that task force group. You suggested a few ideas here that might be helpful. I'm trying to figure out how to tackle this college readiness thing. That's probably, to some degree, of the things that we've talked about. We haven't talked about everything. Probably the one that needs more work.
One of the things that's occurring to me, and I don't know if we're ready yet, but what I'm beginning to sense is we might need to be taking a little bit of a time out on some of these big questions that are interconnected. Mm-hmm. We have some testing deadlines that are being changed. We have standards that are being revised. We have all these different components coming together at once, and the last thing I'd like to do is throw things out of line. So internally, I'm beginning to think we need to maybe take some time during the interim to look at some of these things that are kind of butting their heads up against each other. I don't know what your feelings are about that.
Well, I think perhaps on the college readiness thing, I could see some good counsel in that area. I would like us to move ahead, if we can, on the OEA and the report card provision. I think getting a task force working on that, in essence, does that. You know, will give us, some good recommendations when we come back together in the next session. It sounds like and I know because I sit on a P16, that there's work happening there in terms of that college readiness piece. And, that one we might want to slow down a little bit, I think. I think the SES piece is probably pretty simple.
It is.
In many ways, and we could probably pretty quickly move ahead with that one.
Well, this has been very productive.
Yes, it has, yeah. No, I think. I don't know. We don't have a time to meet again, do we?
Not yet.
Okay. Of course we can always just get together and talk.
Right.
As well.
I think you and I might have a chat.
Yeah, let's plan to do that and take it from there.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm supposed to be in committee? Okay.
So what do I do with here?
Well, I need to run over to Ways and Means. Hey, how are you? Good.